Rock of Ages, written by Boudica Muse and read by Penny. There's only ever been one lady in Eddie's life, and that's his guitar. 5 years after he spots her in the music store window, she's still the most beautiful thing he's ever seen. She's always there for him when he needs her, soothing away his foul moods and singing oh so pretty when he picks her strings just right. He knows he never would have gotten through that hellish night in the Upside Down without her. So when he walks into Steve Harrington's living room and sees the sexiest sound system in the Midwest, the first thing he feels is guilt. The pull is too strong though, and he drifts over to the glass cabinet that holds this impeccable beauty and falls to his knees in front of it in supplication. There are mostly empty glass shelves underneath the receiver, and there's a thin coating of dust on the few cassettes and CD cases that are there. Of course Harrington has a freaking CD player. If Eddie goes to use the John right now, he'd half expect it to be gold-plated. Eddie holds out his hands and floats them over the glass, separating him from the silvered face of the stereo. "Don't worry, baby. Dad is here, and I am going to treat you so right." He can feel Steve, curious and lingering, over his right shoulder, but Eddie can't tear his eyes away as he searches for a way in. His fingers itch with the need to twirl her dials and punch every one of her buttons, but there's no handle or obvious latch. "How do I open this damn thing?" he finally asks. Wordlessly, Steve pushes on the small metal tab in the top left corner, and with a click, the door swings open so smoothly it's like a pair of legs parting beneath him. "Oh, you naughty minx, you," Eddie murmurs, and he's already pressing the power button. She turns on with a happy little hum that he can feel reverberate through his chest. "I was going to ask if you two wanted to be left alone, but now I kind of think you might need a chaperone." Eddie looks away just long enough to swing a wicked smile up at Steve, and he catches the way Steve shifts on his feet, swaying closer and then away. He can't put any thought into deciphering the movement, though, because now he can read the artist names on the two lonely CDs on the shelf. Eddie pops back up to his feet and fans the two slim cases between their faces. "Billy Joel and ABBA? Are you fucking kidding me? Where are your albums, Harrington? I know you have shit taste in music, but even you are better than this." "My stuff is upstairs." Steve waves a disinterested hand at the poor, neglected stereo. "My parents have only turned this thing on a handful of times since they got it. I think the only reason we have those CDs is because they came with it." Eddie clutches at his chest, aghast. "Why even get her if you're never going to show her a good time?" He pets the rows of buttons on the tape player gently. "She could have gone to a good, loving home." Steve shrugs, looking uncomfortable. "Gotta have all the gadgets, or someone might think we're poor." He tops that off with a sarcastic little flutter of his hands, and he won't look Eddie in the eye. Like he is embarrassed to be caught acknowledging his family's wealth to a guy who lives in a double wide. Which is adorable, but colossally stupid. No, Eddie doesn't have a fucking CD player in his living room. But he does have an uncle who loves him unconditionally, while Steve sits in this big empty house, practically orphaned by his parents' travel bug. Call him crazy, but Eddie doesn't think Steve is the fortunate one here. There's a clatter of dice from the fancy formal dining room Eddie hasn't seen yet, and then Dustin yells out, "Hey, are we doing this or what?" Eddie sighs and moans pitifully before returning the tragic discs in his hand to their shelf. He kisses the tips of two fingers and presses them to the pretty blue digital display. "I'll be back soon, sweetheart, and I'll bring something worthy of your presence." "Why is she a girl?" Steve asks curiously as they head into where the kids are setting up for the game. Eddie shrugs. "Some things just are. Boats, cars, my sweetheart back at home." Steve shoots him an ultra-confused look, so he clarifies. "My guitar. She won't appreciate me two-timing her like this, so shh." He holds his fingers to his lips. "Mum's the word, Harrington." The confusion on Steve's face doesn't lift, but it does shift ever so slightly. Like, it's not the words confusing him now, but Eddie is, like, a person. It's kind of fun putting that look on his face. The best part is watching the way the confusion always settles into acceptance. You can see it clear as day on his face, how he doesn't always get what's going on, but he's willing to go along for the ride anyway. Eddie can't help it. He loves it. Sue him. But he thinks it's cute. Endearing, even. "Your secret's safe with me," Steve says. There's a thin veneer of sarcasm over the words, but Eddie can tell he means it all the same. If Eddie's guitar came to life one day in some kind of psychedelic fever dream and interrogated Steve over whether Eddie was cheating on her, Steve wouldn't say a word. There's no answer when Eddie bangs on Steve's door the next morning. He takes a couple steps back, leaning back and craning his neck to verify that, yeah, the Beamer's in the driveway. It's 9 in the frickin' morning anyway, where the hell else would Harrington be? His hand is lifted to knock again and he almost smashes it right into Steve's face when the door suddenly opens. Steve's hair, considered by some to be one of Hawkins' most precious natural resources, is all flattened on one side of his head. He's wearing nothing but a ratty old pair of gym shorts that show about 2 inches more of Steve's thighs than is seemly, and Eddie mentally pats himself on the back for showing up so early. Steve, on the other hand, just squints at him for a long moment, like Eddie might be some kind of delusion. "Sorry for waking you, sleeping beauty."
"The hell are you doing here, Munson? It's 9 in the goddamn morning."
He steps aside so Eddie can come in off the front stoop, though, so he can't be that mad. Even if the guy looks ready to shoot lasers out of his very sleepy eyes.
"I didn't realise you were such a late riser, Your Majesty," Eddie says.
It's only a half-hearted jab in Steve's direction because there she is, looking just as beautiful in the morning light as she did last night. It's a testament to just how obsessed Eddie is that she can take any of his attention away from the way Steve looks right now, all warm and rumpled. He should be grateful, though. He's not supposed to be looking at Steve. Not when he's watching, anyway.
"You guys left at 3 p.m, Steve grumbles. But after he finishes scrubbing the sleep out of his eyes, he looks a little more alert.
"You're right, I'm sorry. I should have let you sleep. It's just..." They're in front of the cabinet now and Eddie reverently eases the glass door open. "This lady and I have a date." Steve grimaces and rubs at his face again. "Christ, you're so weird." "Go back to bed, man. We'll keep it down until you've got a couple more hours." He does honestly feel bad for showing up so early. Eddie is frequently guilty of not thinking things through. Unless it's one of his carefully constructed D&D campaigns, he mostly operates on impulse and half-baked ideas. It's not until everyone around him is angry and annoyed that he even realises he's done something wrong, and then the only thing to do from there is forge ahead and crack jokes to win them over. "Can't. If I go back to bed now, I'll just toss and turn. I'm going to shower. Don't do anything weird." Steve gives him one last suspicious glare and heads back upstairs. And okay, Steve's annoyed, but he didn't kick Eddie out, and Eddie got to see the way the back of Steve's mostly bare thighs look when he walks upstairs, so he's going to call this one an unmitigated win. He drops his shopping bag full of tapes to the ground in front of the stereo and starts pulling them out. He's tried to scale back how many he bought, knowing he couldn't possibly get through them all in one day, but it was too hard to decide, and now most of his collection is spread out all over Steve's living room floor. He knows which one he wants to listen to first, though. If he's going to take this beautiful lady on a musical journey, it's only appropriate that he starts with the album that started it all for Eddie. He slips Black Sabbath's Paranoid into one of the two tape decks and fiddles with the settings until he thinks he's got it to where he wants it. He's never even looked at a stereo half as fancy as this one before, but he figures it out eventually. Finally, he takes a second to scope out the speakers discreetly hidden around the room and presses play. He settles cross-legged on the plush white carpet in the centre of the room, just as the first soul-shaking chords of War Pigs ring out around him, and Eddie closes his eyes and lets the music rip through him.
"Generals gathered in their masses. just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction. Sorcerer of death's construction.
He'd been 12, fresh out of a 3-month juvie stint for getting roped into one of his dad's scams when he'd heard it first. Wayne had taken him into Indianapolis to pick up a part for his car, and they'd hung out there all day, tentatively warming up to each other and their new living situation with ice cream and a trip to the record store. Wayne had headed straight for the country western section and told Eddie he could pick out 2 tapes, anything he wanted. He hadn't even warned Eddie not to swipe anything, hadn't even hinted that he thought he might. Anything! Eddie had never been told he could have anything of anything in his whole life. Wayne just ruffled what was left of Eddie's buzzed hair and left him to it. He'd wandered through pop and rock, too overwhelmed by the variety and underwhelmed by the handfuls of names he recognised. He didn't want to hand back this gift of choice that Wayne had given him, though, so he kept looking. He didn't remember so much about his mum, but he did remember that she used to play the mamas and the papas when she made dinner. There was a soft haze around the memory, one of the few uncomplicated ones he had about either of his parents. He was running his fingers over California Dreamin', thinking maybe that would be a good choice, a way to hang on to the memory a little longer, when the album playing over the store speakers finished. He hadn't known what was on before, but it had been loud and fast, and Eddie had liked it. So he looked over curiously as the guy behind the counter chose another one. On his 4th visit to the store, Eddie will learn that the guy's name is Frankie, and he doesn't just work there. He's the owner of this place, and the dive bar next door. He ends up learning a lot about Frankie over the years, but this first time is just some guy who's Wayne's age, with tattoos all up and down his arms, and hair that falls to his elbows. It's hard to describe what happened once Frankie finally chose a tape and slid it into the deck. Later, in his most fanciful moments, Eddie calls it an awakening, an out-of-body experience, a communion with a higher plane of existence even. In the moment, it kind of tingled. He didn't realise he'd moved closer to the counter until Frankie was staring down at him, one eyebrow quirked in amusement. "Help you with something, kid." "Who is this?" Eddie asked, pointing up to the ceiling. "Like him, huh?" Eddie nodded fervently and Frankie smirked and handed over the empty tape case. His eyes took in the album art and the band name. All of it was new to him, completely unfamiliar, but so wildly intriguing that he knew immediately that he was taking that one home. "You got anything else like this?" he asked hopefully. Frankie laughed and lifted the hinged section of the counter so he could step through. He clapped a friendly hand on Eddie's shoulder and led into the back of the store. "Sure, kid. I got lots more like this." Steve comes down just before noon, dressed in one of those tight little polos that Eddie hates to love so very much, and twirls his keys on his finger. "Work in 15 minutes, so your date's over. Sorry." The weird part is, he does actually look sorry to be kicking him out. Eddie barged in here unannounced, not even 8 hours after he said goodbye to him the night before, and here Steve is looking ashamed. Like kicking Eddie out is some kind of horrendous social faux pas. Yeah, of course, let me just..." He pops Judas Priest out of the tape deck and hastily gathers his shit back into his shopping bag. He leaves his lady with another silent promise to see her soon. "Hey, man." He bumps his shoulder against Steve's on their way out the door. "Thanks for letting me have my way with her." Steve shrugs. "Sure, any time. Like I said, it's not like she was getting any action from me." Then he grimaces as he realised what he's just said, and Eddie doesn't try to stop the laughter from bubbling out of him. Steve, the King, Harrington, turned out to be one of the dorkiest people he knows, and he likes him all the more for it. It's a trip and a half any time Eddie tries to line up the pieces of the King Steve he thought he knew, and the real Steve he can't wait to know better. "See you around, Harrington." He walks backwards out to where his van is parked on the street.
He can't look away from the way Steve is watching him go. Like he's on a trip of his own from trying to make sense of Eddie. Eddie gets the feeling they'll both get there faster if they quit holding up their memories for reference. Any time probably didn't actually mean any time. Eddie gets that, and yet the very next morning he finds himself on Steve Harrington's doorstep once again. Steve greets him at the door looking just as annoyed and just as shirtless as the day before, but this time he only grunts at Eddie before he lets him in and disappears upstairs again. He looks like he got even less sleep than the night before, and now he feels really bad, but how is he supposed to know? As far as Eddie knew, Steve had no reason not to tuck himself into bed at a perfectly reasonable hour last night. He doesn't feel bad enough to leave, though. Steve's house is too nice, even though it kind of has the air of a mausoleum. Everything's too white and crisp when you're just looking at it, but by now he's found the sweet spot in the living room. If he lays with his legs up on the butter-soft leather couch, his back cushioned by the impossibly plush carpet, it's like his brain gets moved to the back burner, and it's nothing but his body and the music. Everything he puts on, it's like he's hearing it for the first time again. Steve wanders into the living room 3 hours later, looking much more awake and, sadly, fully clothed, while munching on a banana in a decidedly unsexy way. That's a good thing, he reminds himself. If he had to watch Steve Harrington for later banana, he doesn't know what he'd do, but it would definitely be embarrassing. Since he's finally up, Eddie crawls over to the stereo and turns up the volume until they're ensconced in a cocoon of sound and he can feel the vibrations of the bass in his fingertips. The way Steve's nose wrinkles in the general direction of the stereo, Eddie guesses Steve is not a Kiss fan. Neither is Eddie, if he's honest. He knows their stuff, likes it well enough, but it's a little too mainstream for his taste. He'd only been playing it because he thought it might be a little more Steve's speed. Come on, man, not even this one? It's catchy as hell. How can you even understand what they're saying? Are you kidding? The vocals are, well, they're not the best part, but they're an integral component in the formula of what makes metal, metal. He scrambles over to the stereo again and turns the volume down low, and now, yeah, it's mostly just the rollicking drums and screaming guitar coming through, but Eddie knows this song by heart. He picks up a magazine off the coffee table, rolls it up, and launches into Detroit Rock City mid-verse. He's really getting into it, letting his voice explore the rich low notes and the screaming falsetto with one foot up on the arm of the couch. He's so busy making sweet love to his improvised mic that he's already finished the chorus and another verse before he catches Steve's wide eyes on him. He looks surprised and kind of impressed, and shit, he really likes being the one to have put that look on Steve's face. Eddie tosses the magazine aside and chuckles, a little out of breath. Anyway, the vocals aren't insubstantial in metal. Yeah? Steve blinks and cracks a teasing grin. Had no idea your voice could even go that low. You should come to one of my shows one time. I do it. He drops his voice down again, low and sultry. All night long. He's so close, right in Steve's face as he says it, and honestly, that's too much even for him. So he whirls around and flops down onto the couch and doesn't look at the way Steve's watching him. Steve pops a hip on the corner of the couch and says, "Your show? I thought there were three other guys up there with you." "Yeah, of course, man. The band wouldn't be the band without Gareth, Jeff and Ricky." He grins up at Steve. And he just can't fucking help himself, so he says, "You wouldn't be there for them, though, would you?" He's never once bought that being queer is a mental illness, but this uncontrollable urge he has to flirt with straight guys that he knows will never in a million years return his feelings. That surely is a sickness. At least Steve can always be counted on to remain oblivious. He doesn't even blink at Eddie's obvious, so obvious, flirting. That's right, Harrington, Eddie thinks. We're just two dudes having a friendly conversation. Steve laughs and plucks at the front of his shirt. Yeah, I don't think I'd really fit in with all your metalhead friends. There's a whole lot Eddie could get into with that comment. Like, why is it so important to Steve to fit in? And how the whole point of heavy metal is not fitting in. But he figures Steve isn't really looking for a lecture on the importance of counterculture. Instead, he pops back up to his feet and shrugs carelessly. Yeah, you're probably right. Just know that if you ever did come see me play, I'd show you a good time. On the third day, Steve opens the door, shirtless and beautifully rumpled as always, and sighs. Jesus Christ. This time, instead of stepping aside to let Eddie through, he plants a hand on his chest and walks him back a couple of steps. Eddie figures that this is it, his luck has run out with Harrington and his beautiful new lady inside. Then Steve pushes past him and follows the stepping stone path through the front yard and around the corner of the house. In the shadow of the house, Steve stops and picks up a rock. Eddie takes a step back in alarm, thinking, okay, now this is really it, but then Steve shakes the rock and it rattles. Key. Just make sure you put it back when you're done with it and let me get some goddamn sleep. Yeah. The grin on Eddie's lips feels too big for his face to contain it. You got it, Harrington. I know you need your beauty sleep. Oh, shut up. Like you don't put time into your whole... Steve gestures in a way that takes in all of Eddie. Look. Eddie's face is going to crack in half, he's smiling so hard. I do, actually. Thanks for noticing. Steve grunts and heads back into the house, and Eddie allows himself 3 whole seconds of watching Steve's ass bounce in those torturous little shorts before he follows. He really needs to get Dustin a thank you present for insisting they run their games out of Harrington's dining room for the summer. Wheeler's basement had been a strong contender too, but then Eddie would never have fallen head over heels in love with Steve's sound system. And never would have gotten to see this grumpy, weirdly generous version of Steve. It's worth a dozen donuts, at least. Later, when Eddie's halfway through the Motorhead discography, Steve pokes his head into the living room with that same little reluctant frown he gets whenever he has to kick Eddie out. If Eddie were a better person, he'd stop making him do it. Quit hanging around where he wasn't invited and staying way past the time his lukewarm welcome grows frigid. Eddie's never been accused of being a particularly good person. Gotta head to work, Steve says. Oh, come on, Harrington, Eddie groans. I know where the key is now, just let me stay. I promise I won't go snooping under your mattress while you're gone. Steve looks alarmed, and shit, now Eddie regrets making that promise because he really wants to see what kind of porn gets his motor running. He knows he can resist, though, because it's probably just the blandest bleach blonde shaved pussy centrefold Playboy has to offer. Don't you have literally anywhere else to be this summer? Eddie shrugs and gives him a patented, careless smile. I set my own hours, and most of my clients would prefer not to have our meetings during daylight anyway, if you know what I mean. Yes, I know what you mean. You're not exactly subtle, Steve says with an eye roll. Eddie clutches his chest as if Steve's words have speared him through the heart. You wound me, sir. I am the very essence of discretion. The laugh that punches out of Steve sounds completely involuntary, and Eddie mentally cheers. It's a little dangerous how much he likes getting that reaction out of Steve. It feels like the buzz he gets from the first beer of the night, or the thrill he gets from playing on stage. Everything about it is just as addictive, but the consequences of overindulging could be a hell of a lot worse than a simple hangover. It's been enough days in a row that the first time Robin drops by and sees him, splayed out on the living room floor, he feels like it's her that's out of place, not him. Apparently the feeling is not mutual, though, because she stops dead in her tracks and stares down at him. What are you doing here? A voice pitches up to a holler. Steve? Why is Eddie here? Steve appears, wiping his hands on a dishcloth, and shrugs. He just kind of showed up one day and then kept showing up. What am I doing here? I'm trying to have a goddamn religious experience here if you two would shut up. It's a Metallica day. He's working his way back to being able to listen to Master of Puppets without flinching, and has decided the cure for what ails him is to fall in love with them all over again. It's working so far, but he's losing his focus, what with all the shouting about, "It's my house!" and "Don't tell me to shut up!" Eddie rolls his eyes and gets up to stop the music. He's going to have to start over from the beginning of the album now, anyway. "Is he coming to the movies with us?" Robin asks. Steve shrugs and turns to Eddie. "We're going to see Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You want to come?" Robin shoots him a look, and wow, if Eddie isn't subtle, Robin is a flashing neon sign, and right now that sign reads, "Why the hell did you invite him?" "Nah, I'm good here," Eddie says. "Not really the biggest John Hughes fan, and, you know, I'm happiest when I'm with my girl." Which is true, but more than that, he's not really in the mood to force himself into situations where he's not wanted. Not any more situations where he's not wanted. He's already made himself at home in this one. Robin makes a face like she's confused and mad about it, and Steve answers her unspoken question. "Eddie's having a love affair with my stereo." "Don't make it sound so tawdry, Harrington. We're well on our way to a committed relationship." "Oh yeah? How's your guitar feel about that?" Eddie gasps in outrage. "Don't bring her into this!" Robin glances between them, her neon sign face spelling out, "What the fuck?" Steve either doesn't notice or is too used to Robin's judgment to care. "Seriously, you should come. She'll still be here when we get back. Give the poor thing a break or you're going to wear her out." Robin's "what the fuck" sign blinks a little brighter and Steve shoots her a glare. She gives him a wounded look, but Steve doesn't back down, and a couple seconds pass where they have some kind of silent argument, mostly with their eyebrows. Finally, once Steve is the clear winner and Robin is left looking annoyed and resigned, Steve turns to him and says, "Come to the movies, Munson. We can grab Dustin and go for burgers afterwards." Eddie tilts his head and watches the two of them for a second. Steve has on that earnest, caring gentleman face that he gets sometimes, and it makes Eddie want to, well, he just wants. Robin, on the other hand, he thought they were cool, but she clearly doesn't want him there. There's really only one solution here. "You know, speaking of Dustin, I promised him we'd hang out today. He wants to go over his character sheet, scrub out the monster manual, you know, nerd shit. You guys will be bored to tears." Eddie waves his hand dismissively and starts gathering his tapes before he changes his mind and decides to just leave him there. It's not like he won't be back. When he looks up again, Steve looks exasperated and Robin looks relieved. And yeah, this is the right choice. "Rain check on those burgers, though." He can feel eyes on the back of his neck as he leaves and hear Robin whisper yelling something incomprehensible at Steve. But then the door shuts and Eddie decides he doesn't care and doesn't want to know. The next time he sees Robin, she doesn't seem surprised at all to see him, and she settles down on the floor next to him without a word. When she kicks up her feet onto the couch, their ankles knock together and neither of them pull away. Eddie gives her a look as she gets situated, but she doesn't say anything, so he doesn't either, and they let the music wash over them in mostly comfortable silence. He's having a Led Zeppelin kind of day. It's not metal, but he's feeling mellow, and he's always liked being able to pick out their influences on the bands that followed in their wake. "I'm sorry about the other day," Robin eventually says, the words tumbling out of her mouth in a rush. "It's fine. Nothing to worry about." He wishes she'd picked a better song for this little heart-to-heart. "Stairway to Heaven" always makes Eddie emotional. No, I was being kind of a bitch. "Robin, it's fine. You thought you were getting a night alone with Steve and didn't want me third wheeling it. I get it.
No, it's not like that, I swear. Steve and I are 100% just friends and we always will be. It would be, like, impossible.
She seems to realise she is rambling and she cuts herself off, eyes wide. Eddie eyes her curiously.
Impossible?
Yeah, you know, because we don't think of each other that way. If the other day Robin was a neon sign, today she's a billboard, letting everyone far and wide know how uncomfortable she is right now. Eddie's first instinct is to distract her, crack a joke, or do something crazy to diffuse the tension that's rolling off of her. This has been bothering him for a while, though. He knows Robin isn't lying. There's zero sexual tension between the two of them. No pining glances while the other isn't looking. It makes no damn sense because otherwise they're a match made in lovable idiot heaven.
Why not? Eddie asks. Steve's good looking, he's funny, he's got that whole chivalrous protector knight thing going on, even when the world isn't ending. You think you're going to find someone better than him?
Robin's eyebrows are in her hairline, and maybe he's said too much.
Not better, just different.
Different. Eddie rolls the word around in his mouth, trying to glean some meaning from it, but there isn't enough to go on.
Yeah.
She turns her head up to squint at the ceiling.
Anyway, I'm sorry. That's the kind of reason I was such a bitch the other day. Something kind of important had happened and I needed to talk to Steve about it and I couldn't do it in front of you. No offence.
Eddie sucks in a breath through his teeth.
I am a little offended though.
He pinches his fingers together.
Just a little. I mean, we can save the world together but you can't tell me who you're crushing on.
It's just... Robin licks her lips and swallows.
It's not someone conventional.
Because you're looking for someone different. There's a tapping on the back of Eddie's music-addled brain, a growing hunch that he knows what this is.
Yeah,
Robin says, and she looks so damn scared.
Hey, look at me. He's not going to push, but she's got to know he's safe.
Do I look like someone who balks at the unconventional? She wheezes out a laugh.
No, you don't.
So you don't have to tell me anything you don't want to. But you could. You know?
Hey, Eddie, are you sticking around for lunch?
Steve calls out from the kitchen and they both jump. He sticks his head around the doorway.
Oh, hey, Robin. You want a sandwich or something?
She shrugs.
Sure.
No tomato on mine, Eddie says. Steve rolls his eyes. Right, because it would kill you to eat a freaking vegetable. He disappears from view again, and Eddie calls out after him.
Thanks, dear.
Robin's fingers curl gently around his wrist, and when he turns to look at her, she looks like she knows a secret.
You could tell me too, you know?
If you were into someone unconventional.
Eddie grins, though there's a sharp, sudden ache in his chest.
Nothing to tell here.
Nothing but run-of-the-mill, unrequited love. It's a tale as old as time.
He pats her hand, though, because it's sweet that she even offered to listen to his sob story. Not that he's sobbing anyway, not even on the inside. Can't be sad or disappointed if you never expect anything in the first place. It's just Robert Plant crooning away that makes him feel a little tender. Is all. There's music already playing when Eddie shows up the next day. Something new wavy that he recognises, but not being a connoisseur of the genre, can't name. When he walks in, Steve is in the spot Eddie can't help but think of as his, looking appropriately zenned out. He doesn't know what it is, but somehow sitting right there, in that exact legs up position, gets him right out of his head. And it looks like it's working for Steve, too. I'll stop the world. Steve throws him a vague wave in his direction when he spots him, but doesn't say anything. The empty tape on top of the cabinet tells him they're listening to Modern English, and Eddie shrugs. Sure, he can melt with Steve for a little while if that's what it takes to keep him in the room for more than 30 seconds. What's got you up so early? He asks once he's settled in next to Steve on the floor. Keith wants us in early to do inventory. I have to go pick Robin up in a minute, but I thought I'd give this a try since you weren't here yet. Steve rolls his head to look at him, and Eddie's positive he's never seen him look this soft and relaxed. I think I can see why you can spend hours like this. You've really never used this thing, huh? Honestly, I wasn't even sure how to turn it on until I saw you messing with it. Jesus, what a waste, Eddie groans. All that audio power and you don't even keep any music on hand. She can handle tapes, CDs, vinyl, she's even got AM/FM. If she were mine, I'd go bankrupt trying to turn my room into a record store. The weight of the vinyl alone would make my trailer look like it was on hydraulics, and you guys don't even have one freaking record. Steve frowns at him. Yes, we do. No. Eddie flicks his eyes around the room he could now map out with his eyes closed and back to Steve. You don't. Steve huffs and rolls up onto his feet in a move that reminds Eddie why he's the hero in their little band of misfits. He goes over to the low wooden cabinet next to the stereo and slides one of the front panels open, revealing that the thing is absolutely packed with records. There are even some wedged in sideways on top of the stack. Those have been here the entire time. Yeah, I would have said something sooner, but I guess I just assume you would have found them by yourself by now. I'm not a snoop, Harrington. Eddie pulls the first record out and almost drops it in shock. He'd been expecting more of the blandness that blanketed the rest of the house. Something safe and palatable like the Monkees. Definitely not blues legend Muddy Waters. The corners are rounded and the sleeve feels well handled, like it's been played often. Eddie holds it up to Steve. Whose is this? My mom's. All of them are, actually. Eddie pulls out another and another, falling a little more in love with Mrs. Harrington with every album he reveals. John Lee Hooker, Albert King, freaking Howling Wolf. Are you kidding me, man? What? Steve's starting to look worried. These are seriously your mum's? Yeah. When I was little, she used to put a record on and dance me around the kitchen. At least until my dad would inevitably cut in and tell me to go play. Steve's eyes go a little distant at the memory, but then they snap back to Eddie's and the here and now. She's never around long enough to play them now, but yeah, they're hers. Why? Your mom is just light years cooler than I gave her credit for based on the decor of this house. He slips moaning in the moonlight out of its sleeve, unable to resist its siren call any longer, and switches the receiver over to record. She hired an interior decorator for the house, Steve says with a little frown. You really like this stuff? It's so different from everything else you listen to. Au contraire, my dear clueless boy. This stuff is the building blocks from which my stuff is made. Eddie drops the needle and waves a dismissive hand. And your stuff, technically, if you squint really hard. Metal and new wave are just distant cousins in the same big musical family, and blues is their deeply disappointed grandpappy. Steve's face clearly says he thinks Eddie's lost it, but that's nothing new. Right, well, have fun, I guess. Just, you know, be careful with those. I will guard them with my life, Eddie says seriously. It's a joke, just a stupid joke, but Steve reacts like he's just socked him in the face. Oh, shit. Eddie drags his hair in front of his face and forces a weak smile behind it. Too soon? Steve wheezes out of breath and nods, looking away. Yeah. I guess so. I just always have it in the back of my mind, you know. Popper and Joyce hadn't been running their own plan from Russia. If they'd been just a couple minutes later, it was way too close for you and Max. Hey, forget it, man. He reaches out and squeezes Steve's shoulder, though what he really wants to do is pull him into a tight hug. We made it, all right? Alive and only a little scarred up in the aftermath. Yeah, I know. He nods and fakes a laugh, clapping Eddie on the shoulder twice before pulling away. And that's it for their manly show of emotion then. You better get out of here or you're going to be late picking up Robin. I promise, I will treat your mum's records with care and respect. Yeah. Steve starts for the door, but then he stops and scrubs his face with his hand. When he turns back to look at Eddie, he looks lost and hurt and angry. It's a whole maelstrom of emotions underneath that perfect head of hair. Steve. Eddie takes a step forward, no plan in mind about what he's going to say or do next, only knowing that he has to help somehow. His arms are full of Steve before he realises Steve has even moved. And, oh, they're hugging. Steve is squeezing him tight and they're pressed close from hip to shoulder. All he can do is squeeze back and rock Steve side to side a little. You know, if I knew this was all I had to do to get a hug. Shut up, Steve mutters into his shoulder. But then he gives Eddie one last squeeze and lets go. He should have just kept his mouth shut, Eddie thinks. Always a victim of his own damn mouth. Steve does leave then, with one last shy, embarrassed flutter of his fingers over his shoulder. Eddie allows himself one big, lovesick sigh and starts the Howling Wolf record over. Chapter 2. Once he gets the thought, his brain just will not let it go, and Eddie spends half the night scratching down song titles and band names, scouring through all the magazines he's saved over the years with interviews of his favourite artists for any mention of who influenced them, who they admired, who they hated. He looks for any mention at all of where it all came from. Eddie has always seen songwriting as a conversation with the past as much as a statement on the present. Sometimes a guitar riff will hit you like a bolt of lightning summoned from the ether, but most of the time it's in direct reference to something else that's already been written. By morning, he has it pared down to a tight list of absolutely essential listening material. Most of it he already has access to, either from his own collection or the records at Steve's, but some of it needs the consultation of an expert. And for that, he needs to head into Indianapolis. He grabs Dustin on the way so he'll have someone to talk to on the road, and they roll into Naptown Records just as it opens. Eddie! How's it hanging, man? Frankie clasps his hand and pulls him in for a back-slapping hug over the counter. Haven't seen you in forever. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. It's been a crazy year. Finally graduated, though. Fucking finally, dude! Congratulations, though! Frankie nods at Dustin, who's visibly vibrating with excitement, eyes bouncing around all the posters on the walls with wonder. You putting that diploma to good use being a nanny? Dustin opens his mouth, ready to defend himself, but Eddie cuts him off by hooking an arm around his shoulders and pulling him into his side. Dustin's a good friend of mine, practically a brother. Been telling him about this place for a while and finally brought him along so he could experience it for himself. Well, in that case, any friend of Eddie's is a friend of mine. But are there, little man. I'm Frankie. He slaps his hand into Dustin's and gives it a single, bone-jarring pump. Dustin shakes out his hand and mutters something under his breath about not being a toddler, but Eddie figures the humility is good for him. Go pick out two, he says to Dustin, giving him a little shove off towards the racks. Anything you want. My treat. Anything? Eddie laughs. Yeah, anything. You make me spend my hard-earned money on Raffi, though, I'm going to be very disappointed. Screw you, Dustin says, flipping Eddie off over his shoulder. He heads to the back of the store, though, towards the hand-drawn sign that reads Heavy Metal. And Eddie's never been prouder.
I gotta say, Frankie says with a smirk, I love this habit you have of collecting lost little lambs. It's great for business.
Yeah, about that. I'm working on a bit of a project, kind of a musical education thing for another friend of mine. Eddie leans in and drops his voice. You got any back? Frankie just stares at him for a second.
Musical education, huh?
Yeah. Eddie shrugs like it's no big deal, and Frankie doesn't know him well enough to see through his bullshit. Just wanna point out some influences, build an appreciation, broaden some horizons. This guy's got, like, zero awareness of musical history.
Uh-huh.
And this guy, he gonna appreciate how much work you're putting into his education?
He seemed open to it, Eddie says.
Had he, though? As with most new experiences, Steve had mostly just seemed confused and a little wary. But Eddie remembers the little smile that had curled in the corner of his mouth when he talked about his mum listening to her blues records. How Steve treated them like a treasured collection, even though his mum didn't listen to them anymore. He thinks about the way Steve went boneless and totally mellow to modern English, in a way most people didn't get without mind-altering substances, and he knows he's not way off with this. Music might not hold the same emotional resonance for Steve as it does for Eddie. He's sure Steve doesn't feel it with anywhere near the same intensity, but he's not immune to the power of a good song. Eddie just wants to open Steve's eyes and ears a little to what's good. Frankie accepts his explanation with a grunt and nods at the far wall of the store. Plenty of bark in classical. Not sure what you're looking for exactly, but it'll be in there somewhere. Eddie nods in thanks and turns to go check it out. But Frankie gets his attention again.
Hey, Eddie. This thing works out and you do broaden his horizons.
Jesus, he does the finger quotes and everything. Make sure you bring him in so I can meet him. Apparently, he's been hanging out with Steve too much because it only now hits him that he and Frankie have been having two very different conversations.
Yeah,
he says, though his throat is so dry it comes out more of a croak.
Yeah, of course, man.
And it's a shame, because Eddie actually would love to show Steve around his little home away from home. But now if he brings him in, Frankie's going to take one look at his polo shirt and members-only jacket and know he's the guy Eddie was trying to educate. Except the scare quotes aren't really necessary, because that's not what this is about. The whole Nancy Wheeler infatuation aside, Steve didn't earn his popularity with the ladies in high school by holding their hands and protecting their chastity. The things Eddie's heard about what Steve's mouth can do would make a Sunday school teacher's ears bleed. And you don't earn that kind of reputation when you're secretly wishing you were with a guy instead. He doesn't care how much he broadens Steve's horizons. Eddie's not stupid enough to believe he'll ever see the benefit of all that experience. He can hear the phone ringing inside the trailer before he even gets the key in the lock. It rings and rings when he gets the key stuck and then unstuck and, of course, shuts up the second he bursts through the door. Eddie gives the phone the finger and heads for his room, but he gets all of two steps down the hall before he has to turn on his heel because the damn phone is ringing again.
Yeah?
Oh, Christ, there you are, Steve says in a rush. The relief in his voice triggers a rush of panic in Eddie's chest.
Yeah, I'm here. What's wrong? What happened?
Nothing. Nothing. No, everyone's good. Man, don't worry. Steve clears his throat. You didn't show up today. And when I called earlier, your uncle said he didn't know where you were. I think I woke him up, actually. He sounded pissed.
Shit, Eddie's gonna owe Wayne a six-pack for that. Everyone else with Eddie's number knows not to call until after 7.
It's a minor concern, though, because the much more pertinent issue is that Steve is the one that called. And not just once, but multiple times. All because he didn't see Eddie for one day.
Did you miss me, Steve?
Eddie asks in a teasing lilt. Damn, he really wishes he could see Steve's face right now.
You've been here bright and early every morning for weeks. I guess I'd just gotten used to my daily heavy metal wake-up call. And when you didn't show, I thought, you know, something might be wrong. It's been 2 weeks at most, but Eddie is willing to let the hyperbole slide since Steve is so concerned. Well, I'm home, safe and sound. No need to worry. Just took Dustin on a little road trip. Kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. Yeah, I figured it must have been something like that once I found out Henderson was MIA too. Eddie leans his elbows on the kitchen counter and hides his face in his hand for a second, even though there's no one, not even Steve, to see him. It's just... It kind of kills him to know Steve even cared to check on him, let alone call around to all their friends to try and find him. For all Wayne loves him, he's always trusted Eddie to run free and take care of himself. Or maybe he was just too tired to be any stricter. But either way, he was never much for checking in on Eddie. So, to what do we owe the pleasure of this call now, Harrington, if you already figured it out? Steve hesitates and Eddie has to grab a handful of hair and pull it to get through the silence. I just wanted to be sure, you know? Eddie has to force a grin so he won't sound like he's cracking in half. Well, like I said, I'm good. Sorry to make you worry your pretty little head. Steve makes a derisive sound over the line and Eddie's smile gets a little easier to hold on to. So, what did you get up to when you weren't busy worrying I got sucked into another dimension? Robin came over and we went swimming. Eddie groans and collapses into a bar stool. Oh, I miss pool day. Are you kidding me? The pool's not going anywhere, Munson. Steve says with a laugh. We can go swimming tomorrow, too. I have the day off. I would have suggested it before now, but I didn't want to get between you and your mistress. How is she? Does she miss me too? Terribly. Steve's voice is dry, but Eddie can't help but notice that Steve still hasn't refuted that he missed him. Give her a kiss for me, will you? Absolutely not. Eddie smothers a laugh with his shoulder and says... So, I'll see you tomorrow? Yeah, if you want. I'll be home, Steve says. Super casual. Like he hadn't just had a day-long panic attack over Eddie's whereabouts. Well then, I'll be there with bells and swim trunks on. He knows Steve is rolling his eyes at him, even if he can't see it. Night, Munson. Eddie lets him go with a sing-songy little, Good night, Steve. And then crashes his head into his folded arms on the countertop. Steve Harrington in a pool. Jesus Christ. Worse, Steve Harrington out of the pool, dripping wet and wearing nothing but a bathing suit. Is it gauche to jerk off in someone else's bathroom before you use their pool? Or is it worse to pop an immediate, visible hard-on the second you see them? Lucky him. Eddie's going to find out. One way or another. Robin beats him to Steve's the next day, and frankly, it's a relief to see her there. The idea of just him and Steve hanging by the pool all day had been a little intimidating, as much as it fed some really filthy fantasies. He'd half convinced himself he was going to do something irreversibly stupid, like say hello by pinning him to a lounge chair and sucking a hickey into his neck. She's fiddling with the stereo, and when she sees him, she holds up a cassette case. Will you kill me if I put on Depeche Mode? Eddie plucks the case from her hand and scans the track listing. Depeche Mode isn't terrible, even if he wouldn't choose it for himself. He even recognises a few of the song names. He shrugs and hands it back. The synthesizer is a sad, soulless excuse for an instrument, but at least they managed to get kind of funky and experimental with it. I thought you were into Blondie and Madonna, though. Robin makes a face. Blondie, yes. Madonna? No way. Don't get me wrong, I know all the words to Like a Virgin, but that's mostly against my will, you know? That was for Nancy when she was all... She mimics the Vecna trance, freezing in place and rolling her eyes back in her head. It only lasts a second, but Eddie's stomach clenches painfully.
Whatever face is making must not be pleasant because she fumbles the case and forces a laugh. So yeah, not the biggest Madonna fan. How do I? She waves the tape vaguely at the stereo and Eddie breathes a little easier because this he can do. It's easier than it looks. You want tape one. It's already there, but he turns the dial on the receiver to show her all of the options and then back until it reads the right display again and motions for her to slide the tape into the deck. And now it's just like your boombox at home. She presses play and the first heavy synth chords come spilling out of the speakers. She smiles for real this time. Thanks. I'll let you pick the next one. Deal. They open up all of the windows that face the backyard and crank the stereo loud enough that Steve comes downstairs with an armful of towels and a cranky expression on his face.
Jesus Christ, you guys are going to go deaf! Steve shouts.
What?
Eddie shouts back. Steve shoots him a baleful look and heads outside, but Robin cracks up. At least someone thinks he's funny. It turns out that all of Eddie's fears about being overwhelmed by the sight of Steve's wet, mostly naked body were all for nothing. Steve doesn't get in the entire day, doesn't even take his shirt off, just judges their cannonballs from a lounger and reminds them to reapply sunscreen. He still looks pretty tempting in sunglasses and shorts, but it's easier to ignore. Eddie's just starting to get a little hungry when Steve gets up to answer the door and comes back with a pretty redhead, his arms loaded down with grocery bags. Eddie's heart sinks. Steve must have invited a date. It's convenient that he's already in the pool because he's going to drown himself if he has to watch Steve turn on the old Harrington charm for some girl right in front of him.
Oh, you came!
Robin exclaims. Then her feet must slip on the bottom of the pool or something because her head disappears underwater for a second and she comes up spluttering.
Yeah, I said I would come after work, the girl says with a laugh. I bought chips. We were having a 2-for-1 sale.
Eddie watches curiously as Robin awkwardly scrambles out of the pool and towels off so she can give her a damp hug. Then she tugs the girl over to the edge of the pool by the hand.
Eddie, this is Vicky.
She waves her hand back and forth between the two of them.
Vicky? Eddie, you might know him from school. He just graduated.
Vicky grins and dips her head shyly.
Yeah, I've seen you around. You're kind of hard to miss.
What's really hard to miss is that Robin has not let go of Vicky's hand and that Vicky is holding Robin's right back.
Well, I try.
His grin is huge and he doesn't even want to try and hide it. He's just so damn happy that Robin is trusting him with this, and a small, evil part of him is even happier that she's not here for Steve. He gives her outfit a quick glance. She has shorts and a t-shirt on, but he's pretty sure that's a bathing suit strap peeking out behind her neck. Good enough.
It's really nice to meet you, Vicky.
He holds out his hand for her to shake it.
Robin shouts, "No, don't!"
But Vicky's hand is already in his and he pulls her into the water. She comes up laughing even though Robin is cursing his name. He takes a lunging swipe at her leg, but she jumps out of the way and goes to sit with Steve. Eddie spends a little while longer in the pool, splashing around with Vicky and daring her to do a belly flop, which she resoundingly refuses to do, till his stomach grumbles get to be too much. He tips his head back to slick his hair away from his face and climbs out. He's rubbing the water out of his eyes when he hears Robin, sounding really worried, say,
"Steve? Are you okay?"
53 minutes, 5 seconds.
It's hard to read his face with the sunglasses on, but he sounds kind of panicked.
What?
53 minutes, Steve says again, enunciating carefully. 5 seconds. Robin slides her eyes to the left, over to where Eddie is still standing, clueless as hell.
What does that have to do with... She stops, and they do that silent conversation thing that they do every once in a while. And since the world doesn't seem to be ending or anything, Eddie heads over and grabs a towel off the seat next to Robin. Steve stands abruptly, grabs Robin by the wrist and tows her inside, yelling, "Be right back!" over his shoulder. Eddie looks back at Vicky to see if she has any clue what that was all about, but she just smiles blithely from the edge of the pool and lifts one shoulder in a shrug. "Pass me a chip bag?" He does, then tears one open for himself and stuffs a handful of chips into his mouth. He could wish for less weird friends, but then life would be a lot less interesting. Eventually, the two of them come back, and if Steve is kind of fidgety and spaces out once or twice, he's at least trying to pretend that nothing happened. Eddie gives up trying to figure out what set him off. Maybe he saw a bee. Who cares? There's a warm, gooey feeling glowing in Eddie's chest from hanging out with these three, and it's hard to pin down why at first. He thinks maybe it's the way he doesn't feel that screaming urge to be the centre of attention for once. He likes listening to Steve and Robin bicker over nothing, and the way there's always space for Eddie or Vicky to cut in with their opinions on the best chip flavour or the worst hole at Peter's Putt-Putt Palace. There's no need to throw himself into the spotlight because they're already listening any time he opens his mouth. It's an easy, fun, completely uncomplicated day, and all Eddie knows is that he isn't going to ruin it by looking at anything too closely and trying to find a flaw that isn't there. Even as the sun gets lower in the sky, no one seems eager for the day to end, so Steve takes some burger patties out of the freezer and the four of them stand around the grill for a while, arguing about the best way to light it. Robin gives up the second they realise there's no lighter fluid in the house, and Eddie follows her inside so they can watch Steve and Vicky struggle with the charcoal from the safety of the kitchen window. "She's nice," Eddie says, bumping his shoulder with Robin's. "You seem happy." "She is. I am." Her dreamy smile just confirms it. "Okay, but you get that if it were not for the lesbian thing, she's as conventional as they come, right?" He's been waiting to say it for hours, and she doesn't disappoint him with her reaction, gasping in outrage and whacking him in the chest. She's biting down a grin while she does it, though. "Really, she's great, Robin. I like anyone who brings me food." "She really is," Robin sighs, starry-eyed. "You really don't have any room to talk, though. You realise that, right?" She's making meaningful eyes at Steve, who is dressed like he walked out of a Gap ad. And Eddie's first instinct is to prevaricate, obfuscate, or just flat-out deny. But he's already implicated himself once before, and if she was brave enough to introduce her girlfriend to him, he can at least admit he's got a crush on Steve. "That's all surface, though. It's weird where it counts." He taps his chest, right over his heart. He thinks he might have to explain what he means, because honestly, Steve isn't weird at all. It's that he's always contradicting Eddie's expectations in the best possible way. It's the way he cares about his friends and will always unflinchingly put himself between them and danger, and the way he's always so accepting of the weirdness around him. But Steve himself? Nothing weird about him. Robin must get it though, because she just rolls her eyes and says, "Tell me about it." It doesn't matter anyway. Eddie turns away from the window and leans against the sink with his arms crossed. "I told you, there's nothing going on there. I am perfectly aware how straight he is." Robin's face drops. "I wish I could tell you he feels the same way, Eddie, but..." She looks like she has a lot more to say, but her lips are pressed tight, holding her words in. Eddie laughs, and it doesn't even hurt. "Oh God, no, don't worry about it. I have no illusions about that." "You could tell him, though, about being gay. It might help." She shrugs and shakes her head, looking out at Steve and Vicky in something like amazement.
It helped me. He was surprisingly great about it, you know? Once he got over the initial shock. Eddie just shakes his head because he's thought about that too. Once he realised Steve was Robin's confidant, he had several long, drawn-out conversations with the Steve in his head before he admitted to himself how stupid it would be. Even if Eddie managed to successfully mask his feelings for Steve, it would always be there between them. All his harmless, flirty little jokes suddenly wouldn't seem so harmless anymore. He doesn't want to see the way Steve looks when he's letting him down gently. He doesn't think he could take even the softest rejection from Steve, and he'll never have to if Steve just never finds out. It's different, Robin. She frowns but doesn't argue, so she must realise the truth of it. It's then that Steve comes in a huff and with a plate full of still raw burgers in his hand and says, "Screw it, I'm just going to do them in a pan." He's more pissed than a slightly delayed dinner should warrant. So when Robin and Vicky peel off to giggle about something in the living room, Eddie crashes into the counter next to Steve, leaning in so Steve will look at him, and quits scowling at the pan as it heats. "Level with me, man. One great head of hair to another. How tragic am I looking right now?" Steve looks at him out the corner of his eye, and Eddie turns on the full puppy eyes. Steve hesitates, then lifts a hand to slowly wind one damp, frizzy curl around his finger. He just holds onto it for a second as Eddie forgets how to breathe. Then he tugs once and lets it go. Eddie is going to be able to feel that fucking tug on his hair in his dick and in his soul for years to come. He just knows it. Like you were on your way to a funeral, hit some roadkill and decided to wear it as a hat. Well, that does sound tragic. Help me out, man. I know you've got mousse or gel or something in this house. Steve laughs at that, finally seeming like his mood has lifted a bit. Yeah, you came to the right place, Munson. Bathroom at the top of the stairs. Use whatever you need. The bathroom is suspiciously tidy. The only clutter on the countertop is a box of tissues and the soap dish, and Eddie opens the medicine cabinet with a vague sense of guilt. He hasn't opened so much as a closed door while Steve's been out of the house. It felt wrong to go looking for Steve's secrets when he was keeping such a big one himself. He had said to help himself, though. Steve wasn't joking. He really did come to the right place for hair care. Eddie has his pick of almost a dozen different hair products, and he feels overwhelmed for choice since all he has at home is a $1.79 bottle of Vidal Sassoon. It takes a couple of minutes of fussing with it, but he's eventually able to restore the tragic mop on his head to his usual artfully tousled waves, and he winks at himself in the mirror. When he goes to put the mousse away, his hand hovers over the bottle of Obsession for Men on the bottom shelf. Steve's not one of those guys who takes a bath in cologne, reeking of it so bad you can smell him across the room, but Eddie does catch a hint of it sometimes. Usually whenever he's leaning in way closer than he should be. He uncaps the bottle and lifts it to his nose and has to bite down hard on the inside of his cheek. It's like Steve's right there with him, smelling clean and a little citrusy, and if he closes his eyes, he can pretend. Just for a second. He lets himself picture Steve, leaning up against the sink, his head tilted to the side so Eddie can tuck his face in close and breathe in the cologne warming on his skin. Just for a second. Then he opens his eyes, puts the bottle away, and goes to see where Steve's at with the burgers.
Somebody who cares for me passionately, with every thought and with every breath, someone who'll help me see things in a different light. All the things I detest, I will almost like.
For the next few days, Steve's weirdly busy. It's not like he's ever spent all that long hanging out in the same room with Eddie the whole time he's been holding communion with his stereo. Whenever he wasn't at work, he would be watching TV in the den or taking care of surprisingly mundane chores like laundry and washing the dishes. But in between, he was always ducking his head in to toss a sarcastic comment Eddie's way or just chat for a minute or two about everything and nothing. Then, out of nowhere, Steve suddenly has every reason to be out of the house. He's got to go to the bank, the post office, the freaking dentist, not once, but twice. If Eddie didn't know better, he'd think Steve was avoiding him. But if that was the case, he doesn't know why Steve doesn't just kick him out instead of fleeing his own house. It's all definitely very weird, but Eddie is plenty experienced at spotting when people are annoyed by him, and there's none of that on Steve's face for the 0.25 seconds he does see him. So since he has the house to himself, Eddie focuses on his grand musical education project, so he'll have it ready for Steve whenever he pulls his head out of his ass. It's good he has the time, because it takes some editing. The track list he'd originally thought was tight and concise ends up being too bloated to fit on one tape. He ends up cutting back when he admits to himself that no amount of education is ever going to enlighten Steve to the genius of Damage, Inc., and obsesses over whether he should move backwards or forwards in time. Once he finally decides where he wants to end it, though, everything clicks into place. The night he finishes, he gets a call from Steve. He'd been expecting it to be one of his customers asking for a delivery, so when he hears Steve's voice, the phone almost slides out of his hand. "You there?" Steve asks. "Yeah," Eddie coughs to cover the squeaking in his voice. "Yeah, I'm here. What's up?" "Nothing. I just have tomorrow off. I wanted to see if you wanted to hang out." "I do," Eddie says, shocked into simple honesty. "Did you have something in mind? Because I've actually got kind of a surprise for you." "Just a movie and some dinner afterward." "Aliens is out this week. Seemed like the kind of thing you'd be into." There's a pause, and then, with a teasing lilt to his voice, he says, "I like surprises, though. We can do your thing instead, if you want." "No, no, we can do both. Your surprise won't take that long, and I've been dying to see that movie for months." "Cool. So do I get to know what this surprise is now?" Eddie knows he's not doing it on purpose, but Steve's voice comes out so low and seductive that he has to prop himself up against the kitchen counter and take a deep breath. "That's not how surprises work, Steve." Steve chuckles, and Eddie's guts clench at the sound. There's something so personal about hearing Steve's voice over the phone, like he's whispering right into Eddie's ear. "We only need about an hour for my thing, so I'll see you around noon," Eddie says, already knowing he's going to be a nervous wreck all morning, thinking about Steve's reaction to the tape. "Is Robin coming too? I can swing by and grab her on my way." "Yeah, and give her mother a heart attack when she sees who's picking up her daughter," Steve says with a laugh. "No. I was thinking it'd just be you and me, if that's cool." "Sure, yeah, I mean, why wouldn't it be?" There's a weird flutter of nerves in his chest when they hang up, and he doesn't have any clue where it came from. There was just an extra little something in Steve's voice that he's never heard directed his way before. Like an easy, practiced confidence rolling off of him that wrapped around Eddie's ears and made him want to agree to anything he said. If that's anything like the way Steve talks to the girls he dates, it's no wonder he's melted so many panties in his day. "You know you shook me. You shook me all. Chapter 3. "All right, Munson, what's this surprise?" Steve asks the second he's in the door. Eddie thinks he was probably one of those kids who went searching for his parents' Christmas present stash weeks before the day came. There's no need for any more suspense, though, so Eddie draws the tape he's worked so hard on out of his pocket with a flourish and holds it up between two fingers. Steve's face lights up with a gently thrilled smile. You made me a mixtape. He reaches out to take it, but Eddie pulls it out of reach and tsks at him. What part of surprise don't you understand? He nudges Steve out of his way and goes over to the stereo. Get comfortable. We're going to listen to it. Smokestack Lightning starts and Eddie settles in next to Steve on the floor so they're shoulder to shoulder. Steve turns his head to look at him with an amused crinkle of his forehead. I don't know what I thought this was going to be, but it definitely wasn't this. Open up your ears, dude. I'm about to take you on a musical journey through time and space. Oh yeah? Where are we going? To the magical land of heavy metal. Where else? Steve groans, but there's a big smile on his face and he just turns his attention back to the ceiling and says, okay. Eddie does his best to just sit back and let the music tell the story, but he can't stop himself from pointing out where a distinctive musical style carries from one band to another, or the way the blues steel guitar shifted to the psychedelic licks of the 70s. He tells a story of how Dave Davies from the Kinks slashed holes in his speakers with a razor and pioneered a whole new sound for the guitar, and tries to keep it condensed when he talks about the way most, if not all, of these artists were writing as a way to let out their rage against society's injustices. Steve doesn't say much, but Eddie can tell he's listening, to the music and to him. He even sees his ankle shake along in time to War Pigs. It's a quick hop from blues to metal, if you ask Eddie. The influences are obvious. It's once you're there that things start to get a little muddy, so the second half of the tape is a brief tour through the subgenres. And here, Eddie has to talk a little more to explain what's going on with the way something that was never meant for the masses ended up going mainstream and the internal backlash it caused. Steve just nods along, still looking a little lost, but with him enough that Eddie catches him bobbing his head to Van Halen's cover of You Really Got Me. When Kiss comes on, Steve looks at him expectantly. You're not going to sing along this time? Don't worry, Harrington, you're still going to get a performance out of me. Actually, shit, that's up next. Eddie scrambles to his feet and heads for the door. Keep listening. I'll be right back. When he comes back with his guitar slung across his back and a small practice amp in his arms, Steve jolts up to a seat. You're kidding. You know I have neighbours, right? I can play quietly enough to keep the Joneses off our back. Relax. He sets the amp down next to the stereo and carefully brings his baby around to his front. Just thought it was time for the missus to finally meet the other woman. Steve snorts out a laugh as he climbs up to sit on the couch, but Eddie ignores him. Now, ladies, I want you to play nice, Eddie says quietly as he strokes his hand up the neck of his guitar. I promise that you're both very important to me, but we need to work together here. He can hear Steve laughing even harder as Detroit Rock City winds down. But Eddie ignores that too and presses pause so he can get set up. Okay. Eddie takes a breath once he's ready and faces Steve. This last one is what I played to summon the bats in the Upside Down. I wish you could have seen it, man. It was the most epic, hardcore, metal-as-fuck moment of my life. We could hear you, you know. Steve seesaws his hand. A little, just barely over all the thunder, but enough that we probably could have moved on to phase three without the walkies. Eddie just smirks and says, well, I hate to break it to you, but even if you heard a couple of riffs over the noise of the storm, you are not prepared for how hard this song rocks. Then Eddie presses play, takes a deep breath, and drops into it. He doesn't regret choosing it, of course, but Master of Puppets is a long-ass song, and even though he knows it backwards and forwards by now, it still requires a lot of concentration. The first time he gets a chance to look up is when the vocals come in and the guitar settles into a steady rhythm. Steve's expression reminds him of the look he got when Eddie had sung for him, surprised, and a little impressed. It's a reaction that will never get old. In fact, it's enough of an ego boost that by the time the interlude hits, it's like he can feel himself melding with the recording. He isn't even one note off from Hammett's solo, even though it's been a couple of weeks since he's practiced it. Once the song launches back into the main verse and Eddie can play any attention to Steve again, he's leaning forward, his elbows on his knees, and failing to hide a smile behind his hand. Christ! He really needs to figure out a way to bribe, beg, or extort Steve into coming to one of his corroded coughing shows, because with Steve's eyes on him like this, Eddie has never played better. Sometime in the back half of the song, Steve relaxes back against the cushions, one ankle propped up on his knee and his arms spread wide over the back of the couch, as his eyes follow Eddie's hands with a burning intensity that he hasn't seen from Steve since he tore that bat in half. It makes Eddie want to throw the guitar aside and climb into his lap. He'd never actually do that to his baby, of course, but the urge is undeniable. The song finishes with one last thrash of his guitar strings and Hetfield's echoing, distorted laugh from the stereo, and that's it. That's the end of Steve Harrington's crash course in heavy metal. Okay. Eddie sucks in a deep breath. I know you probably still don't like metal, but tell me you at least get it, at least a little bit. If this didn't do it, nothing will. Eddie wishes it didn't matter so much, but the music is a part of Eddie, and if Steve can't get the music, then he'll never get Eddie either. And if that's the case, well, probably better that he finds out now before he falls any harder. I get it. Steve stands and takes one slow step after another until he's standing toe to toe with Eddie. I get why you like it anyway. It's fast and loud and complex. It sounds like someone turned you into sound waves. He curls one hand around Eddie's guitar strap and the backs of his knuckles press against Eddie's rapidly thumping heart. It never got a chance to calm down after the song, but now it's trying to beat right out of his chest. He's not sure whether it's him that sways closer or Steve that pulls him in, but it's definitely Steve keeping him there. Steve? He doesn't know what he wants to say, but it's fine. Because Steve goes on like he hasn't spoken. I still don't like metal, sorry. His eyes drop to Eddie's lips. But I do like you. He leans in, and then just before their lips meet, his eyes dart up to Eddie's like he's asking if this is okay. Eddie sucks in a breath, throws away the tattered scrap of caution he's been clinging to, and closes the distance. He grabs Steve's face in his hands and tilts his head just so, and when Steve opens up for him and groans into his mouth, it's so far beyond okay they're going to have to come up with a new word for how good it is. Eddie has always had a wild, vivid imagination, but even in his filthiest fantasies, he's never imagined it could feel this good just to have Steve's tongue sliding against his. Steve lets out a small sound, almost like a whimper, and Eddie has to pull back to look at him. He can't believe this is actually happening. It is, though. There's a glazed over look on Steve's face, and he's the one who put it there. So mixtapes do it for you, huh? He says. Wait till you hear I already made you a second one. You're joking, Steve says, but he looks pleased. Eddie shakes his head. Muddy waters to tears for fears in 12 easy steps. I wanted to prove metal and new wave really are related. Steve lifts a hand to trace his thumb across his bottom lip, and when Eddie nips at the pad of it, his already dark eyes go black. God, you're incredible. Eddie backs away from him and eases his guitar strap up and over his head so he can set her down somewhere safe. He's grateful to her for getting them this far, but he wants what comes next to be just him and Steve. So I take it Robin told you about me. Not on purpose, but you should know she's pretty terrible at keeping secrets. I'll keep that in mind. Would have been nice if she'd let something slip about you, too. Eddie's hand curls into Steve's soft blue shirt, and he soaks in the way Steve doesn't just come willingly. He melts against him. His nose pressed to Eddie's cheekbone, he says, "She didn't know, not really. How could she when I didn't even know?" And that's the really crazy part about all of this, because Eddie has known this part of himself since Abby Joyner tried to kiss him in kindergarten, and he wished it was her twin brother instead. What changed? Hard to explain. Steve kisses the corner of his mouth and pulls his bottom lip between his teeth. I'd rather just kiss you some more, since you seem to be okay with that. That's pretty hard to argue with, so Eddie lets him pull him onto the couch, their legs tangling and their hands reaching for each other. They make out for long, endless minutes while Eddie learns that Steve likes to have his scalp scratched and his earlobes bitten. And Steve runs his hands all over his back and shoulders like he's going to have to sculpt them from memory later. It's the longest Eddie has ever kissed someone without the other guy sticking his hand in his pants, and it's maddening and wonderful, and taking every ounce of his self-control not to drag Steve's hand onto his crotch anyway. He's getting close to breaking point, his body screaming for something more, but Eddie's not sure Steve is ready for that yet. So he pulls away slowly, trailing kisses over Steve's jaw and neck until he can make himself back away completely. When he opens his eyes, Steve looks lust-drunk and dazed, and Eddie has to steel himself not to go in for another kiss. "I know you said it's hard to explain, but do you think you could try?" He takes Steve's hand in his and kisses the heel of his palm and flutters his lashes as ridiculously as possible. "I'm incredibly vain. I want to hear every detail." Steve sighs and drops his forehead to Eddie's shoulder. "Was that last time you got out of the pool that did it?" "I don't know why that time, because I'd watched you getting in and out all day, but suddenly it just hit me that I'd rather pause and rewind and watch that moment over and over again than watch Phoebe Cates take her top off even once." Ed is a little lost because he doesn't know who the hell Phoebe Cates is, but he gets that whoever she is, she's definitely a girl. "Well, I'm definitely flattered," Eddie says, "but still surprised." "I was too." Steve turns Eddie's palm over in his and idly traces the lines there. "You kind of sent me into this sexual identity tailspin. It's why I haven't been around much. I needed time to process, I guess." "And what's the verdict?" "Well, I still definitely like boobies, I checked." Steve shrugs, and Eddie thinks that maybe the matter isn't 100% settled in Steve's mind. "But I guess you made me realise I don't exactly mind the lack of boobies, either." "Dude, you gotta stop saying boobies." "What do you want me to say instead?" Steve says with a laugh. Eddie swallows. "Tell me this isn't happening just because I'm the first guy to come along who you thought might be receptive to exploring this little discovery of yours." Steve's eyes widen and his grip on Eddie's hand tightens, like he's afraid Eddie will get up and go, which just plain isn't happening. No matter what Steve says next, Eddie's too far gone for any kind of self-preservation measures. "That's not what this is at all. Eddie, I haven't been able to stop thinking about you for 1 minute since we dragged you back through the gate. I was so worried you'd lost too much blood and you weren't going to make it, you know?" His thumb brushes the raised bump of a scar low on Eddie's belly through his shirt, like he knows right where it is. Like he could find it in the dark. "And then once you were better, I thought..." Steve shakes his head like he can't believe his own stupidity. "I thought maybe it was like with Dustin and the kids at first, like some kind of protective instinct. I hadn't been there to help you when you needed me, and things could have gone so, so much worse. But then you fell in love with my stereo. And you were here every day, and I don't know, I loved it. I loved having you here all the time. The house started feeling empty whenever you were gone. Eddie doesn't know what to say. He'd wondered every day if that was going to be the day that Steve got sick of him. Steve had never given him any indication that his patience was running out. Eddie was just so used to being too much for mere mortals to withstand. He curls one hand around Steve's head and slides it into his hair, enjoying the way Steve's eyelids go heavy at the press of his fingertips. And then, suddenly, I was too sexy to ignore. Yeah, basically, Steve says it on a heavy exhale. Look, I know it sounds crazy, but that day in the pool, it was the knock on the head I needed. The last one came too late for me to do anything about it. I wasn't going to let this one go while I still had a chance. It just took you 3.5 days to make that decision, Eddie teases. What can I say? I'm a beautiful idiot, Steve says. You have to give me time to process, but I'll get there eventually. You are beautiful, Eddie agrees. But I don't know about the idiot part. I think it's more like life keeps throwing you into these unexpected situations, the kind that anyone would have the right to react badly to, and you just keep proving again and again what a good dude you are. Steve looks down at their linked hands and brushes his thumb over Eddie's knuckles. I'm trying. He's so serious and quiet when he says it that Eddie has to kiss him again and again. And he loses count after that because Steve's hands start wandering again. It comes faster this time since he's already so turned on, that pulsing need in his groin. Like if something or someone doesn't touch his dick soon, he's going to start dry-humping the air. So he pulls back and puts his hand on Steve's chest when he tries to follow. Steve looks at him like he just took away his puppy. We keep going like this, we're going to miss the movie. Steve grabs his hand and kisses Eddie's palm, then the tips of his fingers. Finally, he turns his cheek into it and grins at him with just a hint of wickedness. It'll probably be in theatres for weeks, you know. Eddie opens his mouth and closes it because shit, he doesn't have a good argument for that. Something happens in Steve's head while Eddie flounders for a response. And he puts on a smile that's sweet and charming and fake as hell. You know, this was why I was going to wait until after the date to kiss you, but seeing you play was just too much to resist. He stands and holds his hand out. You're right, though. Let's go see the movie. Eddie stares at his hand and then at him. This was a date? Steve laughs and drops his hand. Yeah, I mean, I don't usually take my bros out for dinner and a movie. I realise I didn't say it straight out, but I thought it would be kind of obvious by now. I guess I'm just used to dates being a six-pack and trading blowjobs in a parked car, Eddie says, standing slowly. There's a flare of heat behind Steve's eyes, and his hands reach out for Eddie's waist like he just can't keep them to himself any longer. Well, I'm all for the blowjobs, but we don't need the car. I've got a perfectly good bed upstairs. He leans in and presses a kiss just under Eddie's ear. Do you want to grab the beer now or afterwards? Eddie groans and turns his face into Steve's. After. Later. Never. I don't care. Steve's room is tidy like the rest of his house, but there's a little more of his personality in there. Posters on the walls and trophies on the shelves. A fact that Eddie only knows, because he peeked inside exactly once before when the door was open. This time, actually being in there, Eddie couldn't tell you what colour the walls are. All he knows is that Steve's hands and mouth are both a little rough on him, hungry almost, as he walks him back towards the bed and pushes him onto it with a light shove. You sure about this? Eddie asks. He curses himself for giving Steve another out. It's like his brain is actively trying to cock-block him.
Thankfully, Steve doesn't take the out, just spreads Eddie's legs with his palms and kneels between them.
Christ, Munson, I'm not a virgin.
Steve turns his face into Eddie's thigh like he's breathing him in, then reaches for his belt buckle.
I think I can figure it out.
He eases Eddie out of his jeans and takes him into his mouth with very little fanfare, and Eddie tips his head back and tries to keep his soul and body in one piece. It's beyond comprehension that Steve would be this good his first time out. The most Eddie had hoped for was something sloppy but enthusiastic. He would have given bonus points just for Steve being easy to direct.
Stupid, Eddie thinks. I'm an idiot.
Steve is always blowing his expectations to smithereens, but this time it's really on him for forgetting what he already knew. Steve Harrington is a goddamn sexual overachiever. There's no direction necessary. He already knows just how to tease every moan out of Eddie's throat and seems to have the kind of innate skill to avoid his gag reflex that Eddie would have fucking killed for at 15. He tries to distract himself from it, wants to let the moment drag out and linger, but it's impossible to think about anything but the soft, wet heat of Steve's mouth. Way too quickly, Eddie's fingers curl into Steve's hair and he has just enough presence of mind to warn him.
Oh fuck, Steve, I'm close.
Steve pulls off him with one last devastating hollowing of his cheeks and sucks a kiss into the crease of his hip instead. He pumps his cock once, twice, and then Eddie's gone. He's not sure where. Saturn, maybe. Wherever he is, he's definitely seeing stars. Eddie collapses back against the mattress and Steve crawls up his body to hover over him on hands and knees. Steve kisses his neck and a shudder rips through him. He's too sensitive, but his hand twists in Steve's shirt anyway. He wants him closer, needs to feel his weight holding him down, but Steve won't budge. His stare pins Eddie to the bed instead, his eyes roaming over him as he pops the button on his jeans and eases his cock out. I'm gonna need... Eddie sucks in a breath and swallows. Just a minute. Steve nuzzles the corner of his jaw right under his ear. It's fine. Take your time. But Eddie can feel him stroking himself, the backs of his knuckles brushing over his belly, and okay, that's enough for him to rally. He wraps his hand around Steve's and grins at the choked-off gasp Steve lets out when his thumb swipes over the head. Christ, he really wants to hear what sounds he can make Steve make when his mouth is on him. Lay down, baby. It's my turn. Steve groans low in his throat and shakes his head. Like this. I won't last if you blow me. Eddie growls in frustration, then fists Steve's t-shirt and pulls. At least let me see you then. With a muttered curse, Steve rises up onto his knees to take his shirt off, and Eddie uses the opportunity to tip him off balance and onto his back. He swings one leg over him and straddles Steve's thighs, his cock jutting up thick and pink from the open fly of his jeans. Steve blinks up at him, looking stunned and desperate, and Eddie drags one hand through the hair on his chest and down over his belly before he wraps his fingers around the base of Steve's cock. Eddie rolls his lower lip between his teeth. He wants to swallow him down so bad, he doesn't care how long it lasts, as long as he gets him in his mouth. But Eddie breathes and shoves down his own desperation. Steve isn't going anywhere, he's pretty sure. They've got time. If Steve wants it like this for now, that's how we'll give it to him. Wait, wait. Steve pushes at the hem of Eddie's shirt. You too. I want to see you too. His eyes on Steve's, he tugs his shirt over his head and tosses it aside. Then he lifts his palm to his mouth and licks it. The noise Steve makes when his hand wraps around his cock is better than anything he could have dreamed up himself. He watches the blush rising up from Steve's chest, turning his shoulders, neck and cheeks all a hot shade of pink, and wonders if the skin there would feel hotter under his tongue. Through it all, with every twist of Eddie's wrist and slow, tight squeeze of his palm, Steve tries to keep his eyes on him, even when he's arching off the pillow. It's almost hotter than when he was in Steve's mouth, and he wishes he could have waited. If Steve keeps up with the way he's rubbing his hands up and down his thighs and tracing the spider on his chest, though, he might be ready to go again any minute. He leans in closer, close enough that their noses brush, but he pulls his mouth out of reach when Steve tries to go in for a kiss. Do you have any idea how gorgeous you are right now? I've thought about this, you know? Eddie strokes him a little faster and enjoys the way Steve's breath picks up. More times than I can count. None of them even compare to the real thing, though. Steve groans and cups the back of Eddie's neck, like he's holding on for dear life. His hips buck up, his cock pushing into Eddie's fist. Thought about you too, he says, breathless. 3 days just thinking about you. About this. Eddie does kiss him then. He has to. He gets in one lurid swipe of his tongue against Steve's before he stiffens beneath him and cries out against his lips. Hot cum pulses against Eddie's hand and he can't help the wild, giddy grin on his face. He sits back on his heels and lifts his hand to lick a drop off the side of his thumb and smirks at the way Steve's eyes go heavy with lust. Fuck, that is way hotter than it has any right to be. Eddie gives him a nice, long look. Could say the same thing about you, big boy. They separate to clean up and come right back together on the bed, curled up on their sides, facing each other. Their hands are between their faces, and Steve plays idly with the rings on his left hand while Eddie tries to make sense of everything. I really like you, you know, he finally says. I was happy just being your friend, but this is... I mean, I don't want to just get off once and pretend it never happened, you know? Steve's hand stills and he looks over at him with a deep frown carving a line between his brows. I wasn't going to suggest we should. Good, Eddie breathes out. Good, it's just... This isn't going to be easy or anything. People are assholes. Steve props himself up on his elbow so he can frown down at him even harder. Eddie, there is a world underneath our world filled with monsters and blood and death, and every day I wake up worrying that today is going to be the day that someone or something tears a hole in the very thin barrier that keeps us separated from it. Steve blinks like he can't believe he even has to say it. Do you really think I care about what any of those assholes have to say about you and me? It's easy to say, Eddie says quietly. Harder to live with. Steve lays back down and curls their hands together again. I know. I'm not saying we should drape ourselves in rainbow flags and go for a run down Main Street or anything. All I know is, as hard as it might be, I know it would be a lot harder to live without you in my life. Steve gives him a terrible, sad smile. I've had plenty of nightmares that prove it. Eddie would do anything to wipe that look off Steve's face, and thankfully, now he knows just how to do it. He rolls into him and presses his lips to Steve's, soft and sweet and lingering. Steve lets out a shaky exhale, and when Eddie pulls back, Steve's smile is back to being the happy kind. Don't worry about it, okay? You've got me. And then, because he can't help himself, he adds, at least as long as you've got that beauty downstairs. Right, Steve adds with a laugh. Can't forget the stereo. Or my guitar. Of course, Steve nods sarcastically. You, me, the stereo, and your guitar. Anyone else we need to add to this relationship? Nah, that should do it. They both crack up and Eddie thinks, yeah, that's enough. That's plenty. The end. Podficker's note. I hope you enjoyed this, and I'd really love it if you could let me know. You can find me at the Archive of Our Own under Penny Plain Knits.